Welcome to SI's Planet Football Podcast, where each week we discuss the latest in the world of soccer. I am SI.com soccer editor Avi Krediter, joined today by SI senior writer Grant Wall and SI.com's Levy Bird. Guys, this is a special second podcast of the week edition. We are ramping it up. I hope you guys were able to listen to Grant's chat with Jeremy Schapp about E60's documentary on FIFA and Sepp Blatter. Pretty fascinating discussion on a great documentary. Grant, Livy, welcome.
Good to be here. Podcast galore this week.
We are going ham. Livy, welcome back. It's been a few weeks since we had you in the mix, but always good to rotate you aboard.
It's always nice to be here.
Guys, let's go a little U.S.-centric today. I think we're going to keep it domestic for the most part. U.S. national team is the men's national team anyway, has a couple of high-profile friendlies coming up against the Netherlands on June 5th and Germany on June 10th. Jozy Altidore down for the next month plus with a hamstring issue. It always seems like it's someone's hamstring keeping this team from full strength. Grant, I guess big picture, you know, the two friendlies, the results don't really matter so much, but you would like to see a full strength U.S. squad against these two teams, and you're just not going to get it.
Yeah, it's a big bummer for Jozy Altidore. Here's a guy who would probably be starting up top for the U.S. if he were healthy. He missed the last game against Mexico, serving a U.S. Soccer Institute red card suspension that he got from the previous game. And now he's out 4 to 5 weeks with another hamstring injury, bringing us back to last year when he got the same type of injury on a different leg at the World Cup. And you certainly hope for his sake that this isn't something that becomes a pattern. Soft tissue injuries, non-contact injuries are something you don't want to make a habit of. And he was just starting to get into a rhythm with Toronto that he told me he'd been looking forward to, because there's a lot of start-stop with them for a while. Really wanted to get going, and suddenly this happens again. And so clearly we're not going to see him for the Netherlands or Germany friendlies. Gold Cup, we'll have to wait and see, because, you know, it's in July and there is the possibility of bringing in new players for the knockout round. So clearly not out of the Gold Cup, but, you know, discouraging nonetheless.
Yeah, definitely. And he had, well, I think it was 5 goals in league appearances. I think another one in the Canadian Championship for Toronto FC. Like you said, starting to build a bit of a rhythm, and building a rhythm with Michael Bradley also, which obviously would have or could have translated to the international level, but that leaves the U.S. shorthanded up top. Leave you one thing that the U.S. has going for it, though, is the fact that Aaron Johansson is in some pretty spectacular form to close out his season in the Netherlands. Is he a guy that you see kind of just stepping into that role as Altidore? I mean, they're not the same kind of player, but in terms of production level and form, you would figure that he's kind of the guy that's going to get the first crack.
It seems to be that way right now. And like you say, Johansson's, not only is he in great form, he's been scoring some spectacular goals as well. So, you know, the U.S. can always use some more production from the forward position, whether they play one or two or however many they decide to play in each game. And he really does seem to be kind of in form right now. You know, say what you will about Eredivisie defenses, but he's still scoring goals. And for a forward, I mean, scoring goals at any level is a good thing. And it'll build confidence. And if nothing else, moving forward, he'll be playing against at least some of the players he's familiar with if he does get called in against the Netherlands and even against Germany. I mean, it's a similar style, similar types of players. So it could definitely be a good opportunity for him to get back in the picture and really to make his mark and say, hey, I'm still here and I'm still, you know, very much a part of the U.S. national team picture moving into something like the Gold Cup, which it'd be interesting to see him play in the Gold Cup for sure.
And it's funny because, you know, we talk about last year Altidore's position and being hurt in the World Cup. Johansson was hurt right before the World Cup. You know, had this ankle injury that really hampered his summer. So maybe it's redemption time for him that he can kind of seize the opportunity with the U.S. But Grant, who are some of the other guys that you could see potentially filling the void, at least in these two friendlies, and then if need be down the line in the Gold Cup based on kind of current form and who's been in Klinsmann's good graces?
Well, I think Juan Agudelo is a guy that stands out right now as a guy who scored against Mexico coming on as a sub. has had a good season so far with New England, seems to be rediscovering his scoring touch after being out in the weeds for quite a while, actually, several months. And there's so many of these, or at least several of these, still young U.S. forwards, guys in their 20s. And Agudelo's on the younger side of that, who, if they can get into a rhythm, I think Agudelo really has an opportunity here. And I'm curious to see what Klinsmann does. Does he bring Jordan Morris in? Because he started Morris ahead of Agudelo against Mexico, and obviously Morris scored. So there's another guy that you have to wonder, is he going to be in the mix? Charlie Davies is kind of a question mark as well. Now, obviously, he's playing right next to Agudelo with New England, and Davies is not the player that he was before his accident in 2009, nowhere near as fast, and yet it's almost like a basketball player who's all about athleticism that learns how to do a turnaround jump shot later in his career. Like, Davies has found ways to become effective. He's become a smarter player positionally. When you see some of the goals he's been scoring lately for New England, will Jurgen Klinsmann include him on the roster? I don't know.
He hasn't. Yeah, Davies had a four-game scoring streak for New England. He hasn't scored in the last couple now, and of course that's because Brian Strauss wrote about him for SI.com and the classic SI jinx, right? But it's a great story, though, and it's about how he's kind of evolved as a player, like you're talking about, both on and off the field, and how he's kind of changed his expectations. When he first came back to MLS with DC and was really just getting back into the mix, you know, he talked a lot about wanting to get back to the national team. I don't think he mentioned that once in his chat with Brian, and that kind of shows, you know, he's just kind of letting the business end of things be taken care of first before looking that far ahead. So we'll see. I think these two friendlies are a good opportunity, but knowing Klinsmann and his pattern of calling in players, he kind of tends to go with the guys that he knows, which would open the door, you would think, for Chris Wondolowski again. He's on the cusp of 100 MLS career goals, which would make him the ninth player all time to do that. Liviu, do you see Wondolowski still in the mix? He's aging. He obviously had that miss against Belgium in the World Cup, but he's been welcomed back with open arms, and he's been a regular call-up under Klinsmann. Is he a guy that not only do you think will be there, but do you think he can step into that void?
I think those are two kind of separate questions, just because Klinsmann does seem to like Wando for several reasons. You know, I mean, he likes to say he's a pure giver, you know, all of the usual Klinsmann platitudes, but he's, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's a good leader. He can be there for the younger players and really kind of show them what it means to be a professional. And you know, this is a guy who really, you know, as we've said plenty of times about him, he's brought himself up from, you know, he was making just pennies basically, and now he's on a designated player contract, so he knows what it takes to really break through and be, you know, become that guy who people look up to and who people expect to do good things. You know, obviously he tied the single season MLS record with 27 goals in 2012. He's about to hit 100. You know, he seems to be a guy who Klinsmann always wants to call in. And, you know, the other option, of course, is, as Klinsmann has shown, he'll go and find some player playing in a second or third division somewhere and give him a chance. And who knows, he'll probably end up scoring two or three goals in the next couple of games. But you just never know with Klinsmann. It seems to be either the players that he knows very well and the players who he knows what he's going to get, or he'll come out with these interesting call-ups that make you scratch your head and sometimes end up working out very well for him. So who knows? I mean, it's tough to say who's going to get the call at this point.
I would also say a couple of things here is that with Wondolowski, there is national team Wando and there is MLS Wando, and I think you have to separate the two. I think you can certainly say that at this stage of his career, at his age, you probably, as a fan, don't want to see him be playing a lot for the U.S. national team right now in this stage of the cycle. That said, I think he's a good guy to have in camp because he works his tail off, and Klinsmann likes to have guys who are really good team guys in there. So I can certainly understand if he's included on the Gold Cup roster. MLS Wando is still very dangerous, Still one of the best stories, maybe the best single story in league history from where he's come from to where he is. And getting to 100 goals is no small feat. There are very few MLS players who've done this. It takes longevity, and he's done it differently. He's done almost all of those goals in the last 4 years or so, and I think he scored 30 more goals or more than any other MLS player during that time. And that's just remarkable and deserves so much in the way of compliments to what Wando has done in MLS. I would also say about the U.S. national team, keep an eye on Clint Dempsey here and what his role is. You know, here's the captain, and yet he hasn't been involved a heck of a lot with the national team lately. Wasn't involved in the Mexico game, wasn't playing in either of the two Europe games in March, had gotten injured right as he landed almost. And from what I'm told, not altogether on the same page with Jurgen Klinsmann right now, related to fitness stuff from January, related to just his feelings of playing for the national team. So I'm very curious to observe this Dempsey-Klinsmann relationship moving forward.
I was curious about that too, actually. And it's funny because, you know, he wasn't called in for the Mexico game, yet he's playing 3 days later for the Seattle Sounders. And I thought that kind of went a little under the radar. I mean, I don't see how he isn't a part of this team coming up in a couple of weeks, given how he's played for Seattle. I mean,
no, he's been terrific.
Yeah, he's been great. And you wrote about his partnership with Obafemi Martins and how they've all worked together under Ante Razov, who's an assistant in Seattle. So we'll see about Dempsey, and that's definitely something to keep an eye on. And spinning it back to Razov a little bit, I was crunching some numbers, and with Wando, you know, if he keeps the pace that he's on this season, it's possible that he passes Razov, who's on 114 goals right now for his career in MLS, for fourth all-time. And to think that Chris Wondolowski could be the fourth all-time leading scorer in MLS history is kind of bananas. But
I think you looked at the same table I was looking at, because I was going to mention something about that as well. The only active player ahead of Wondolowski right now is Edson Buttle, who hit 100 midway through last year and has been stuck on that number ever since. So
sort of active quotes.
Yeah, I think passing Razov is realistic. And passing Jason Kreis at number 5 on 108 goals is, I guess, a little bit more reachable probably, but I wouldn't be too surprised to see him jump all the way to 4th.
Yeah, definitely attainable. All right, so let's keep it with national team, but change it from men to women. We'll also keep it in the forward conversation. The U.S. Women's National Team, one more send-off game prior to the Women's World Cup. It's against South Korea at Red Bull Arena on May 30th, coming up pretty soon. And the U.S., they're coming off a 5-1 win over Mexico, in which Sydney Leroux got a start, played fantastically, scored a couple of goals. Abby Wambach scored a couple of goals. And now you've got a very deep forward core, Grant, that, you know, everyone's kind of jockeying for position for that opener against Australia in the World Cup. And it's interesting. I mean, it's the permutations have changed considerably, and I'm wondering who you think might be in that starting lineup on the first game.
Well, what's fascinating to me is, one, how much depth there is. You've got several players there who could theoretically start games at forward for the U.S. in the World Cup, but also how unsettled it is even now, and it's unsettled across the board. Alex Morgan is about probably the only forward who's a guaranteed starter if she's healthy, and she's missed the last two games. Precautionary, says Jill Ellis, due to this knee bruise, but suddenly it's gone from missing those two games to Ellis saying, well, it's 50-50 that Morgan won't play in the last send-off game against South Korea. And so as we get closer and closer to the World Cup, you start wondering how serious this is and if there is a chance this could affect Alex Morgan's World Cup. I know they're being precautionary, but it's still worrisome if you're a U.S. fan. Now, it's a good thing if you're a U.S. fan. You see Sydney Leroux come out, get her first start in a long time, and score two good goals against Mexico. Now, she's not at 100% health either, but she's playing through her issues, still appears to have her speed, seems to be getting sharper on her finishing. You know, has been training well the last couple of camps. Then there's Abby Wambach, who has been scoring goals, hasn't been starting every game, started against Ireland, didn't start against Mexico. but is having an influence and seems to be rounding into her World Cup form, which she's been pointing toward for a long time, but hasn't always been in that form, as she has admitted. So she's involved as well. Then there's Amy Rodriguez, who was starting games until recently and seemed to be doing quite well, according to Jill Ellis, as a kind of a setup forward, a second forward. And then there's Kristen Press, who started up at forward the last game instead of out wide as a midfielder. Now, Press is going to start. The question is where she's going to start. And that's a tough question of where she's most effective. And I'd be curious to hear Leaveyou, actually, because he's written about Kristen Press, where he thinks she would be most effective on the field.
You know, it's an interesting question, one that I was questioning myself when I was watching the last game. But I think it partly depends on who the U.S. plays against, because I think against Ireland, we saw a little bit more of an emphasis on trying to play through the middle of a team that was going to pack it in and try to sit back. And so the wingers were staying a little bit wider, and there was a little bit more emphasis on circulating the ball. It wasn't fast enough. The ball wasn't moving fast enough, I didn't think. But then against Mexico, you see both Megan Rapinoe on the left, and you get Morgan Bryan on the right, who traditionally plays in the middle, but she can play out wide. And they were both crisscrossing into the middle very frequently. Kristen Press was playing up top, and there was a little bit more, I guess, a little bit more of a dynamic element to the attack there. And then when you get Sydney Leroux, whose pace in behind Mexico's back line, which they were holding a pretty high line all game, you know, just all the elements kind of came together, and they, you know, eventually, once they started scoring, it really picked up for the U.S., and they played very well. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned Leroux. Her last goal before her breakout against Mexico came in a 6-0 win over Costa Rica in World Cup qualifying. So it's been a while since she's been on the score sheet. If it were me at this point, I would probably save Leroux and Wambach for later in the game when defense is tired and Wambach has, you know, the size and physicality to really cause problems against tired defenders, and Leroux coming out and sprinting at 100% on turf, which is always a little bit easier to get speed than grass, which can be a little heavier. I think they could be very dangerous there. Kristen Press, I think she'll probably start on the right wing at this point. It just seems like that's kind of the spot that she's locked down for herself. And it also offers, you know, it leaves Morgan Bryan as a bit of a later sub in the middle when the U.S., if the U.S. needs to find some, you know, find some fresh legs in the middle of the field to break through maybe a packed-in defense. Maybe they need to get somebody on the ball who can pick out passes. So, like you say, there's just a number of different combinations right now, but I would be surprised, I think, if Press started anywhere but right wing at this point.
At the end of the day, it's a good problem to have, right? I mean, these are all dynamic, potentially dynamic players, and over the course of a long tournament, or at least a lot of games in a short period of time, really. I mean, if they make it to the final, you're looking at 7 games in about a month. You're going to need some different combinations, and I think that's Jill Ellis, despite a lot of her critics, has been pretty steadfast in mixing up the starting lineups and trying out those different combinations, seeing what works, what doesn't. And I think she's got one more game to do that again, and we'll see who ends up getting the start there and what kind of clues we can glean from that. But at the end of the day, there are options, and it doesn't look like Abby Wambach's NWSL hiatus has really hurt her too much. I think she's been doing what she's doing. She's missed a couple of headers that you can point to and say, oh, maybe if she had more games, then maybe. No, I just think that happens in the course of a game. I mean, she's scoring goals, getting into dangerous positions, and ultimately it looks like they're peaking at the right time, Grant.
It seems like they are, you know, and I know that Ellis certainly has her critics out there, and what we've seen is her experiment with some things and move away from things. You know, there was Carly Lloyd playing out wide at the start of the year, but then she's now back in the center with Lauren Holliday. You know, there's a choice that appears to have been made with Julie Johnston starting at center back over Christy Rampone, the captain. And I think she deserves that. And I think it's an example that Ellis is willing to reward people who get opportunities. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about Julie Johnston's story. You know, she's there's been three different injuries that have allowed her to at least get on the field and make her mark, and she's certainly done that. You know, you look at how this team is coming together, and it's been a process. And yet, I still have some concerns about when they play against the top teams, like a France, like a Germany, if maybe there isn't enough steel in the central midfield, especially to guard against counterattacks. But at the same time, I see Holiday and Lloyd as a pretty good central midfield. I'd actually like to see a little more from Holiday. I think she's not been what she could be for several games now. And that's someone who really should be the best passer on the team and be a bit more influential on games. But she also needs to defend a little. And so does Lloyd. And so far in recent games, they've been doing that, but against opposition that is admittedly not great.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that one of the reasons that I think Holiday isn't really giving as much as she could at this point is because she's being asked to play that lower role and being asked to defend a little bit, which, I mean, it's not like she can't defend, it's just that she's not quite as used to having to defend. And if you take a passer like that, and, you know, what Ellis is trying to do, she's trying to get kind of a deep-lying distributor type. You know, you think of Andrea Pirlo, who just hit his 36th birthday, and is still just insane in central midfield. That's the kind of thing that I think Ellis is going for, is trying to get somebody in that spot who can distribute. But at the same time, you know, I would, like you said, I'd like to see more out of her. I think if she played higher up the field, it would be a little bit easier for her to show more. And honestly, I think part of the reason that Ellis has her critics is because of players like Julie Johnston, right? There's a number of younger American players who just, for one reason or another, can't seem to get an opportunity unless the right number of injuries happens, and you know, if they're called up at the right time and just happen to be there, then maybe they get thrown in. And I think there needs to be a little bit more of a willingness to throw some of these players out there. And, you know, Julie Johnson's an option that I wouldn't mind seeing kind of in a defensive midfield type role. You can move Holiday and Lloyd higher up the field if you put her there, if Rampone's healthy enough to come back in and start and play 90 minutes. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I think would take this U.S. team to the next level, is maybe having a little bit more willingness to throw some of these players in when they've shown, you know, for instance, at the U-20 World Cup, when Johnson and Morgan Bryan played so well for the U.S., take some of those players and throw them in and see what they can do, maybe before you get a number of injuries and have to put them in there.
One other quick point I would make is Hope Solo is often, almost always mentioned as the best goalkeeper in the world on broadcasts. And she's a very good goalkeeper who on her day is capable of being the best goalkeeper in the world. But she made a mistake on that goal that Mexico scored the other night and came off her line too late. Mexico ends up scoring on the set piece, taking a 1-1 tie into halftime. And we've seen in NWSL a couple of those situations as well with Solo. And, you know, she's terrific and she needs to be out there, I think, if the U.S. is going to win the World Cup. But she also needs to get a little bit sharper.
I'll agree with that completely. And that's a point I made, I think, in my post-game story when I wrote it, is that she's had those situations, the crosses that come in earlier from a little bit higher up the field. It's a tough situation for a goalkeeper. The flight of the ball is different than it is on a corner kick. It's hard to tell, you know, where's the ball going to drop? Am I going to be able to get there before the defenders who are running straight at me? It's a difficult situation and one that I don't think Solo has to handle very often when she plays for the U.S. because a lot of times, you know, teams aren't really serving that ball in and they aren't really getting dangerous opportunities like that. But I mean, I agree. I thought that she should have done better there. She hesitated just for a split second, and that was all it needed to drop and you know, for an easy finish, basically. And yeah, there are times like that where it does look like she needs to get a little bit sharper in those situations.
Well, the U.S. women have one more game to fine tune and kind of work out those kinks and see what works best. And we'll see it very soon in a little more than a week's time. Again, South Korea, May 30th at Red Bull Arena before it's Destination Canada. Guys, I want to wrap up with some MLS talk. Couple things, really. First, Grant, what do you make about this Miami expansion team in NASL? It definitely seemed like, at least from a PR standpoint, it was some legitimate shots fired. You've got a European icon playing, you know, jumping the gun on MLS. They've got a team in 2016 ready to go. There's no stadium situation to worry about. They're going to play in an existing stadium, I believe one of the existing world-class stadiums, as it was put so eloquently in the team's release, Miami FC. And yet here is MLS with David Beckham at the helm, still cranking out that stadium situation. No idea when they're going to start playing. But right now, it would appear, at least on the public surface, it's advantage Paolo Maldini and NASL.
Well, Paolo Maldini, one of the owners of this new NASL team, is going to start in Miami. And a couple of things I would say here. There's a back and forth going on between MLS and the NASL, and we've seen situations like Minnesota, for example, where you have an existing NASL team that's going to move to MLS, and that's a loss for the NASL. We've seen the competition here in New York between the NASL Cosmos and the MLS teams here. We've seen Atlanta is a place where it's hard to imagine the NASL team doing very well there with the start of a new MLS team in 2017. So a lot of back and forth. And we've seen some very famous ex-players become part of ownership groups lately for NASL teams. Brazilian Ronaldo for Fort Lauderdale, Paolo Maldini now in Miami. Obviously, Pelé has been connected to the Cosmos on a few occasions here. So first off, what I'd say about Maldini is I am always struck by how much respect this guy has from other superstars. And you guys know I love doing these rapid-fire quizzes with very famous ex-players. And one of the questions I always ask is, who is the toughest defender you ever went up against? And whether it's Raul or Ronaldo or anyone basically from that era, they always say Maldini. Like, it's incredible. And so it's what's funny to me is this might be the one guy that's cooler than David Beckham as far as ex-soccer players. And here he is moving into Miami. Curious to see how much of a role he actually plays. Is he going to be active or not?
And also, too, I mean, look, this doesn't discourage MLS, I don't think, in the least. I mean, they'll happily go about their business. It's not a great look for them if you're a casual soccer fan and you're seeing this NASL team pop up and wondering what MLS's deal is. But at the end of the day, if we fast forward a few years and you've got Beckham running a team and Maldini running a team in the same city, Miami's going to be a pretty awesome place to be. Also, there are a pretty big saturation of soccer teams now in Florida. I mean, you look at Jacksonville, Tampa, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Orlando City, obviously in MLS. Things are really, really going strong in an area that was kind of a wasteland for a while. And so you're kind of seeing a renaissance there. Now, whether it works is another thing altogether, but we'll find out 2016, 2018, 2019, whenever MLS launches down there.
One thing I did want to say is I got a strange sense of joy from kind of the underhanded snark in the press release from Miami FC. Miami FC, which will be the city's only professional soccer club, you know, will play its home games in one of the existing world-class stadiums of Miami. And it's great. It's great theater, if nothing else. And it was, I don't know, I was sitting here giggling to myself reading that press release, just thinking of, I mean, you know, what are the honchos in the MLS office going to think when that runs across their inbox and they're going, wow, look at this. They're really just trolling us right now.
Well, it really sets the table for MLS's release when it comes out, whenever things get settled down there. And that should make for some interesting theater.
Well, and the lingering question for me with the NASL is, what are the ambitions of this league? And are specific teams like New York and Fort Lauderdale and maybe this Miami team, is their ambition to surpass MLS? You know, I don't know if Edmonton, another NASL team, really has an ambition to surpass MLS. And so I'm curious to see where the NASL goes with this. But it's very clear that when it comes to recruiting new owners and some very big name owners, there seems to be a lower barrier of entry into NASL. And so this is going to be an ongoing storyline, but I want to know about their ambitions more and more, and what they really want to do.
I think NASL appeals to those foreign investors because of the fact that, you know, it's something that a little bit closer to what they're used to. There's no salary cap. There's no, you know, there's no player draft or any of that kind of stuff. And it might not be sanctioned as the Division I league right now in the U.S., but I think that familiarity and that, you know, that ability to kind of do whatever it is that you want to do with your team, I think that really helps draw these names in. Whereas in MLS, it is a little bit different, and we've seen a lot of foreign coaches and players come in and struggle to adapt, some successfully eventually and some who just throw up their hands and leave. But it's a different kind of system, and it's interesting that it's, you know, it's a little bit closer to the European system in terms of how open the market is. So I think that helps attract some of these bigger names.
At the end of the day, another strong soccer league in this country is not a bad thing if you're a fan. You know, it's more options, it's competition, it pushes MLS to raise its game, and USL and their partnership, obviously. And it's just another sign of things on the rise, we hope, anyway, as fans and people who work closely to the game. So, hey, it's a good storyline, something to watch. And before we let you guys go, we wrap up Jason Kreis's return to Real Salt Lake this weekend, probably the dominating storyline in MLS. Livy, you spent some time in RSL training this week talking to some of the guys down there. I guess what's the sense you get about them? Is this a weird, awkward occasion? Are they looking forward to it? Have they kind of moved on already? Where did things kind of stand over there?
Well, they were very diplomatic in dealing with the questions. I mean, everybody had the same questions in the interviews when I was at training the other day. And, you know, the one thing that really stood out is that when it comes to the game, when the whistle blows in between the white lines, both teams are going to be fighting for 3 points, and both teams really need a win right now. So I think that's really, it just adds to it, I think, a little bit, the idea that not only is Jason Kreis coming back, but it's not exactly just going to be about that. It's going to be about two teams that really could use a victory right now. But at the same time, you know, you press these guys a little further and you say, like, you know, are you looking forward to it? Is this something that you think is going to be fun? Or, you know, and everybody says, yeah, it'll be nice to see Jason again. You know, it'll be nice to see, it's not just Jason, obviously, Jason Kreis, but it's also, you know, Ned Grabovoy is coming back, and Chris Wingert, guys who were there in RSL's, I guess you could call it, golden era, if you know, winning MLS Cup in 2009, making it to the Champions League final 2011. And really, in my mind, the sense I get is that this is a team that's still kind of in that shadow, so to speak. They're really searching for what's the next step going to be right now. You know, Jeff Kassar has tweaked the tactical setup a couple times. They went back to, you know, a 4-4-2 type of thing. I asked him after the game against the Galaxy, when Nick Raimondo saved the PK in stoppage time to preserve a scoreless draw, I say, so it looks like you kind of moved back toward the diamond. And Kassar was very quick to say, oh, it's not a diamond. You know, that, and kind of the thought I had was that, you know, that was Jason Kreis's thing, is the diamond, and RSL's really trying to move away from that. It's, you know, call it whatever it is. It's a 4-1-3-2. It looks basically like a diamond when they're defending. So in my mind, it's practically the same thing. But it's really interesting to see this club kind of try to find a way to move on. But they obviously still have a great reverence for what Jason Kreis did here. And everybody is very appreciative of all the work that he did. And now it's a completely different team. I mean, Garth Lagerwey's not here anymore either. And it's really, you get this sense that RSL is, in a way, trying to find itself again.
I think also, too, Jason Kreis is so consumed right now with just trying to get any points possible for his NYCFC team. They're not a good team. He knows it. In fact, he's kind of embarrassed by it. And so, you know, when I've seen him after a couple of these games recently here in New York, he just looks inconsolable. And I think there was one moment in the halls of Yankee Stadium after a game, I think it was the one against Seattle, where he walked by me and I said, I think you guys would get there eventually. And he's like, really? You sure? And, you know, he's just a coach right now who's trying to find solutions. And I think it's going to really take some upgrades. It's going to take Frank Lampard coming in this summer. It's going to take some new players at other positions as well before we see NYCFC start to get to where it could be.
And perhaps going back to his first coaching home, I guess, is the place to get it done. I'm sure there'll be a nice pregame reception. I'm sure the Rio Tinto crowd will have nothing but admiration for him before the game. But then, LaVie, like you said, when the whistle blows, these are two teams that could use a win. So we will definitely see what happens. I think that's a good leaving off point for us. We appreciate you guys joining in for a second time this week. More podcasts, more fun. Thank you to Grant Wall and LaVie Verne, and we will talk to you guys next week.
About the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.